is he, my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
And this is Veronica Monet, your host for the Shame-Free Zone. It's another Monday night, and I'm really excited about tonight's program. We're going to be talking about A Guide to Being Human. It's a brand new book out. It's called The Message, A Guide to Being Human, and the author is L.D. Thompson. In particular, I'm interested in some of the things that he has to share with us about how you can use relationships as an invitation to change and grow spiritually. L.D. Thompson, are you there?
I am here, and I'm so delighted to be with you.
Well, I'm very happy to have you here, too. And I understand you've been exploring this concept for about 25 years, the whole mind-body-spirit connection.
Yes.
Is this book a new one?
It is. It's my first.
Oh, fabulous. I see here it's over here on Amazon. Now, what prompted you to write it? And when you say the message, of course, you know, one of the things I think comes up, I want to know, was this channeled information, or did you go to a mountaintop and kind of, you know, spontaneously come up with it, or is this like maybe your personal journey?
I would have to say it's a combination of all three things. And the reason that I would start there is that fundamentally, my journey began really early on. I rejected the sort of traditional upbringing that I had, Protestant upbringing that I had, and a health crisis when I was 17 really put my foot very firmly on the path of spiritual awakening. And there were many different phenomenological things that happened. And I know that this is something that you've undoubtedly run into with your other guests. And it was really the exploration about these phenomena that happened that I think are actually quite commonplace for many, many people that then prompted me to just go deeper and deeper and deeper and keep following that scent. I wanted to know what it was that was actually prompting me to go into places that I wasn't really taught about or offered as possibilities when I was growing up Protestant in the Midwest.
Well, you actually had some type of a mystical experience when you were in your 20s. Is that true?
Yes, that's absolutely right.
Are you willing to share that with our listeners?
Well, sure, absolutely. I'll give you the shorthand version of it. I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and I was really feeling pretty lost, as many people in their 20s do. I had moved out from the East Coast, and I was in a grocery store. Walked out of the grocery store, a man followed me. I, you know, just sort of moved faster, got to my car, put the key in the door, and it was like something hit my forehead. I felt something brush my forehead, and I looked up, and he's on the other side of the car. And he said to me, may I talk to you? And I said, ah, sure. You know, what do you got to say? I figured he was going to ask me for money, pitch me on something. You know, maybe he was a religious proselytizer. I didn't know what. But I was armed and just, you know, braced for it, whatever. And he said, you have summoned me, and I've come to tell you of your life. And I have to tell you, that was the first time and maybe the last time I heard that. And
what does this man look like? We want to get a picture of this.
Okay. He looked like he was sort of ageless, but maybe, you know, like 30-ish. uh-huh. with he was sort of East Indian looking, with long ringlets, sort of oiled ringlets, you know, curled.
Right.
And, you know, he had the most benign, peaceful, gentle look that you could ever imagine on
a human
being.
Now, did you get the sense that he was actually human, or did you feel like you were looking at an apparition?
You know, he was absolutely, in my experience, at 24, he was absolutely flesh and blood. And I spent probably 2 hours with him because, you know, ultimately I felt like, okay, I can trust this person. And so we sat down in my car. And what he went into is really what I would say is the fundamental message in my book, The Message, which is that we each and every one of us, through our soul's journey and its dictum for what it is that we are here to learn, it creates what it is that our reality then becomes. And so, you know, one of the things in the book that I say is that no one has ever made a mistake, not one mistake. And I know that that's really hard for people to embrace and accept, because they look back on their lives, and so often, I mean, I certainly have things that I look back on and I think, geez, I wish that I had known then what I know now, because I would have done something different and differently. But what I feel very deeply and strongly in my being is that as a soul, we come in with this infinite intelligence, and we come here with an aim to learn certain specific lessons, with the ultimate aim of becoming one again with the divine source, the creator. You know what I mean?
Yes, yeah. So, you know, let's, you know, before we get into that, the message that you, I'd like to hear more about your story. Because that's of interest, I think, to people. It's kind of like, give us kind of the movie of it. So, you know, the first thing I want to know is, you know, you're in your 20s. This strange man follows you home.
No, to my car.
Oh, he follows you to your car.
In a parking lot. Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a little different. I thought it was in your house.
Oh, no.
He follows you to your car in the parking lot. Now, what do you do? Do you speak to him? Do you invite him into your car?
You know, it was, I mean, you have to understand, I had moved out from New York City. I was really street smart, really savvy, and I didn't broker any fools. I've never brokered any fools. And so for this individual to actually be so disarming as to get me to listen, to get me to actually come down off of my, you know, I'm 24 and I'm cool and I've, you know, I've got it all together, and oh my God, this person is saying that I've summoned them and they've come to tell me of my life. That's different. That's something that I really need to pay attention to. And then when he began, I can't stress enough how much, and I'm sure you're the same way, I have antenna, and my antenna are constantly up looking for bullshit, looking for the pitch, looking for what's the angle, what's he coming on to me about, you know. And of course, you know, there was also the element of, is this sexual? Is there something sexual going on?
Well, sure. I mean, if you're a young man,
and there was nothing, absolutely zero, nothing at all,
mm-hmm.
and to sit there then and to listen to this. I mean, he was brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and not intellectually brilliant, but just the message that he gave was so simple and so clear. What you think, what you feel, what you contemplate repetitively, that is what you are going to create in your life.
Now, how do you feel... if I may ask
you.
Yes,
please.
I know you're excited about this story, but I'm going to be interrupting you with questions here. how do you feel that's different than the movie The Secret?
Well, you know...
Or do you? Maybe you think they're the same.
I respect The Secret very, very much. I shared it actually with a friend early on when it came out, and her life, very much as a result of watching The Secret, not as a result of me or what I had to say or what I, you know, I've been working with people for 25 years, and her life changed because of The Secret. She watched it and she got it. She totally took it and ran with it. So my only distinction between what it is that I feel that I'm putting out in the world and what I embody and The Secret is, I don't believe that there are any secrets. I don't feel that there is any secret at all. For that matter, I think when you meet an individual, I think that you know on the deepest level of wisdom that each one of us has, you know who that person is. You know everything about them, and you know whether or not they are there to be in your life or not. So, I mean, that's the only distinction that I make. I believe that The Secret as a phenomenon in our culture is extremely important, extremely valuable, and the only thing that I would want people to take from what it is that I'm offering into the culture and then add it to their arsenal is, oh, I do know. I do know all the secrets that there are on earth and all the secrets that there are in the universe. And I know them in a place that's wordless. I know them in a place that is actually so profound, and I can access that place.
Okay. So back to the man.
Yes.
Who comes on to you, not comes on to you sexually, but comes on to you with a spiritual message in the parking lot. What, did you guys go somewhere? Was
no, no.
It brief
no,
in 5 minutes, or did you guys talk for hours, or what
no,
happened?
No, we sat there for probably 2 hours, and his...
And did you ask him, how do you know me and who are you?
You know what? I didn't ask him, how do you know me? Nor did I ask him, no, because I was, again, I have to sort of give you a sort of characterization of who I was at 24, which is not all that different than I am now, except that I have, you know, years of experience under my belt.
Uh-huh.
I was a smart aleck, and I don't want to say that I was intelligent, but I was certainly bright and not easily duped. And so that he was not pitching me or selling me anything. He wasn't selling me a religion. He wasn't asking me to come to his ashram. He wasn't asking me to give him money. He wasn't asking me to have sex with him. He wasn't asking me for anything. He was gifting me with insights into my life and insights into my process, which was very, very, I would say, at the very least, stagnant in that moment. I had moved out from New York, you know, pursuing a career in the entertainment industry, and I was getting nowhere. I was on unemployment, getting, I think it was $52 a week, and could not get a job, even waiting tables. So, you know, for someone to come up to me and to say, look, I can tell you what it is that you're doing, quote unquote, wrong. I can give you insights into how you can adjust your view of the world so that you can actually begin to create what you want instead of what you don't want. That was a big, big, big deal to me. So consequently, in answer to your question directly, I was so taken with his generosity that it didn't occur to me to say, hey, wait a minute. Give me your credentials. And how do you know me? Why are you talking to me? That came later, you know, in my 30s. It was like if somebody would approach me and try to start talking, it was like, well, wait, do you know me? Do you want to talk? I mean, why do you want to talk to me? I'm sure you know how that is in your life, right?
Sure, absolutely. So, okay, what are the first things that he says to you? Does he say something specific about your life or just about life in general?
He did, actually. He went back and he enumerated a number of the different markers in my growth process. So in other words, he told me things that someone would have to be very intuitive. And I actually feel very strongly that intuition is a function that every one of us has, that everyone can tap into, and most people don't. But he had to have been highly intuitive to be able to go back through and say, okay, here were the high points in your life. Here was, you know, a major life crisis when you were 10. Here was a major life crisis when you were 13. Here was a major life crisis when you were 17. And here you are now, and you are trying to make your way as an individual in the entertainment industry. That's not hard to figure out. A young man in Los Angeles, that's not difficult to figure out. But
no,
the
no.
other elements, I would have to say that would take a highly skilled intuitive to have called those particular incidents in my life.
So was there any part of you that was shocked or caught off guard?
Completely. Oh, completely. I was completely blown away by this incident, by this individual. First of all, I have to preface all of this by saying I'm accustomed to being interviewed, but I'm not accustomed to talking about myself so much. I want to sort of find out about you, too. I want to find out about your life and what's going on there.
Well, I'm interviewing you, so.
Okay, so, yes, I was completely shocked and blown away by this individual, so much so that in the aftermath, because I had, you have to understand, first of all, this was in 1975. Okay, so,
right.
I mean, I'm 59, so we're talking
I'm 51, so,
okay.
So there, now you know something about me.
Okay, great, thank you, that helps.
You're welcome.
I mean, it helps me understand because you now, you have close to the context of what it was like in 1975. I couldn't just turn the corner and then say to somebody, hey, I just had this amazing experience with this man.
No,
and
it's very fear-based culture.
No.
It's even now pretty fear-based, but it was way fear-based back then.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they're just, I mean, you know, now you've got The Secret, you've got The Power of Now.
Sure.
You've got Oprah,
we got reality TV shows trying to prove that there's ghosts and paranormal
exactly.
events.
Exactly.
What did he ask you to spread the word or teach other people or
No. He did tell me that was my reason for coming to this lifetime was to be a teacher. But he didn't say to me, now you must begin to tell people what you have learned tonight. Nothing of the sort.
Yeah.
I mean, if he had, that would then have been another. I mean, look, I was raised Baptist in the Midwest, and proselytizing was one of those things that, you know, it's a knee-jerk reaction for me to this day. I mean, if I have Jehovah's Witness come to my door, I have to remind myself, okay, LD, these are really, really sweet and loving people who are here because they believe fervently that they have something to share with you that's important to them. You know, and by the way, I have a friend when I lived on San Juan Island, whenever Jehovah's Witnesses would come to the door,
yeah.
She would take all of her clothes off and go to the door and answer the door naked.
Oh. That's a little more abrupt than my style. I usually, you know, would you like to talk about the Bible? And my response is, sure, what would you like to know?
I like that. So do you know the Bible well?
I read it from cover to cover when I was 12.
Okay.
My mother
All
used
right.
to have me memorize certain verses on flashcards.
Oh, my.
So, yeah,
I'd say I
get a little tired of Christians pushing their book in my face because when they haven't even read it.
So you then understand my knee-jerk about proselytizing and
yeah.
about any sort of invitation to proselytize myself. So, no, that was not part of his thing. It was really just, it was a gift that he gave to me, and I'm so eternally grateful for what it was. And I'm not sure that I'm characterizing as well as I could or articulating.
Well, that's okay. That's
well
why I'm here. I will ask you the right questions and help you
okay.
characterize it. So my next question is, how did it actually change your life at that point, or did it?
Well, that's right to the point, because as I said, I had no context. So I would go to friends. I spoke to friends that evening, and I said, you can't believe what just happened to me. This man, he walked up to me, and he said, blah, 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 and then he talked to me about how the repetitious thoughts that you have actually go out and they create your reality, and how if you are thinking repetitious thoughts that you don't want to create, which most of us do, by the way, then you're going to create those repetitious thoughts. And people looked at me like, okay, that's great, uh-huh, let's get back to the laughs. And I really, there was no one, absolutely no one, that I could explain this phenomenon to and have them understand or say, oh, what you just had was, you know, a peak spiritual experience, and, you know, this is how I can relate to that. It didn't happen like that until I moved back to New York City about 9 months later. And shortly after that, I met a woman who was to be my voice teacher for the next 4 years. And
so you stayed with entertainment then?
Well, it's been a love of my life. It still is a love of my life. I still produce films and shoot and edit and write, and yes, it's still a profound passion that I have, because I feel like entertainment and media, rather, let me
right.
put it to that, media is one of the most profound tools that we have for transforming consciousness in our culture. And that's why I laud what you do, because you are transforming lives. You know, every time you get on the show, you're making a difference in people's lives, and that's beautiful.
Well,
so,
thank you. And are you planning on making a film maybe like The Secret or better than The Secret?
Oh, I'd love to. And I think that The Secret did a wonderful job. Again, I really honor their insight into really being able to craft that message and make it such that people could get it. And not only that they could get it, but that they wanted it. How clever is that? The Secret. I think
right.
marketing-wise, oh my God, my hat is off to them. That's phenomenal. So, in short, I would love to make a film that as potently crafted that message and took it to the next step.
What do you think is the next step? What is the next step?
You know, part of the message in The Secret is getting, meaning if you know The Secret, you can get everything you want.
Right.
And I believe that the next step is understanding that abundant service, a life of abundant service, so dwelling in abundance and serving from the overflow is the next step. And I'm not saying that they don't know that or understand that or that it isn't somehow characterized in The Secret, but it definitely isn't the primary message. The primary
no, it's
message
not.
Is,
it's actually you know, in a lot of ways, the way the movie comes across, it can be applied in a pretty commercial way about accumulating things.
Yes.
I think a lot of people have used a secret to create other things in their life.
Yes.
But yes, it does have a more of a grasping, getting flavor to it.
Right.
So how would you take that to the next step then?
Well, really simply, and I'd have to say that I'm a works in progress with this in regard to this myself. I do work with a foundation that's called Higher Ground for Humanity, and the aim with Higher Ground for Humanity is to search out those areas of need in the world where individuals of like mind, and particularly individuals who are on the path of spirituality, can come together and they can make a difference, not just with their money, but also with their consciousness. So what I would hope, and if I were going to make a film, what I would hope that it would be able to transmit is that it is the very act of understanding one's native abundance that actually then gives that sense of fulfillment that the grasping, the yearning, the longing for does not. So, and again, I reiterate, I'm a works in progress on this because
we all are.
Yeah.
So how does this apply to the idea of using relationships as part of one's spiritual journey?
Okay, so relationships. One of the major things that I notice in my work with others about relationships is that all too often people come to the focus of I want a relationship, and they are funded in that focus by emptiness as opposed to fullness. So in my work with people, the number one thing that I hammer away at is first fill yourself up with yourself. And that is such a foreign concept to people because they're so accustomed to hearing soulmate, other half, you know, find someone to fulfill you. You know, you're not enough on your own. And if you feel that you're enough on your own, then you're never going to find someone. And I think that that's all, I think it's all smokescreen. I think it's all the really the wrong scent to be tracking along to. I think that the scent to track along to is if you're empty, if you're lonely, if you are wanting that special relationship, create it within first. And I know you have to know this. I know you have to have found this inside of yourself. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing the work that you're doing. But it is that extraordinary moment where you say, wait a minute. If I am trying to find another and I'm not okay completely, totally okay with just me and God, then that I'm always going to be chasing that thing. And I find that even people who are married and have been married for 25, 30 years are still doing the same thing. They're still trying to work it out in their relationship and not filling themselves up with themselves first. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think people tend to do that more so as they get into a relationship. It actually becomes something of a challenge to keep that primary relationship with yourself and your higher power.
Interesting. You know, I think I agree with you. And I think that that's something that is important for people to notice in their relationship as they begin to further, you know, more and more deeply merge with the other individual, because there's going to come that moment. It happened with my mom. She was 65. My father at 70 dropped dead. And I think that for her, that wound reopened all of those wounds of her life. the abandonment by an unknown father. You know, she didn't even know her father. Rejection by her stepfather. You know, on and on and on down the line. I think it just reopened all of those wounds, and she was catapulted at 65 into, what am I? Who am I? What is this? Where am I?
Right, exactly.
And, you know, that's, I cannot look at that and say that that was a mistake. In my book, I mean, you know, I don't mean to pitch my book, but I mean, the book, the message.
You know, you are allowed to pitch a book on this show, so
okay.
Go for it.
the fundamental message there is her soul created that curriculum for her life, designed it for her to arrive then at her completion of this life, having filled herself up. And I can certainly hope and pray that that happened.
Well, is that how it felt when, I mean, you know, did you see her reaching out and doing other things? Or
she married again.
Ah, that's a good thing.
And I would say that so she married probably at, I'm going to say 72 or so, 70, 72.
I have a grandmother who got married at the same age. She was quite a feisty woman. Actually widowed a husband after raising 5 kids. And so at age 50, she went to college and started a brand new career.
Became
a registered nurse. And then when, you know, 15 years later, they tried to retire her, and she felt like she had just gotten started. So she flew off to Hawaii and volunteered, and then Switzerland. And so the only reason that she came back to the States was to marry this romantic man who'd been writing her love letters for a few years.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that...
It was really just an inspirational role model to me of a woman who never gives up and always keeps reinventing herself. So
that I laud, you know, because that is what I feel that everyone should aspire to, because there is in the flesh and in the emotional field, in the emotional body, there's an inclination to what's called entropy, which is sort of shutting down or becoming smaller instead of expanding. And I feel that everyone would benefit by actually saying, hey, wait a minute, I don't have to become smaller. I don't have to become set in my ways. I can actually, you know, grow my brain. I can grow my emotional body. I can push myself to have more experiences. And, you know, I think I can't help but feel that is what I aspire to myself.
It really does take a certain amount of commitment and perseverance to do that, because the tendency is for us to just get lazier and lazier, which actually is a nice segue to one of the topics that I know you deal with, which is how are human beings being changed by their electronic devices?
Well, the short answer is that because we are bombarded every day by waves that prior generations have not been bombarded by, we are actually changing in our DNA. And I hold a belief that we're being changed for the positive, and
I sure didn't expect you to say that.
Well,
I think most people don't see a lot positive going on right now, so it's very interesting. What gives you your hope?
What gives me my hope is simply really my own individual experience. So there's this woman, Susan Weinshank. She's a psychologist. Bear with me here. And she she studied people and their electronics, texting, emailing, Facebook, so on and so forth. She discovered that when people get engaged with their technology and they get a text or they get an email chime, a little squirt of dopamine happens in the brain. So dopamine, previously it was believed that dopamine is just all about pleasure. Well, it's not just about pleasure. It's about the seeking instinct in the human body. So fundamentally, what we're being trained to do is we're being trained to seek community and knowledge and connectivity. Okay? Mm-hmm. So it is an addiction. I will, you know, I have to come down hard on that because, and again, I noticed this in my own life. You know, I'll come home and the first thing I want to do is run to my computer. Or, you know, I hear a text message has come in and I have to go for my phone. Well, that's okay. That's a phase. It's like a kid with a new toy. And we as humanity, more particularly we as so-called first world nations, we're being trained to this and we're going through a phase. And the phase eventually will phase out and we will come to balance. The balance is understanding the power of these tools that we have available to us and that we created them. They're not, it's not as though a computer or a cell phone, a smartphone, is something other than we are. It seems that it is, but the only reason that it seems that it is because it was created by so many minds coming together, so many creative streams coming together to create basically a reflection of what we are. So as we begin to blend with our technology, granted, I can't in this moment, if you say, okay, tell me what Google will say if you ask it, you know, how to, you know, change a light socket.
Right.
I'm not necessarily going to be able to go step by step and tell you how to do that. But that information, because it is vibratory frequency, it's waves that are surrounding us right now. I feel very strongly that the capacity within us is to access that without going to our computer, to access that without using our smartphone. It's in the air around us. Otherwise, how is it that it comes to our phone? How is it that it comes to our computer? Do you know what I'm pointing to?
Well, let's go back to your conversation about everybody having intuition. Do you want to expand on that?
Okay.
Because it sounds like it's a bit related to where you're going.
It is somewhat related, and I can really only relate my own experience. So at 17, I have this health crisis. I then begin to travel with my brother and sister-in-law. They're traveling across the northern part of the United States. I wind up in Seattle. I have a dream. And the dream is of being in this, like, YMCA. And I see that there's candy sitting on a soap dish. And I reach for the candy, and all of a sudden this alarm and a light goes off. Beep, 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 beep. And I wake up from the dream, and I think, wow, that's a really weird dream. Why would I dream about that? So the next day, I wake up. I go through my day. I hook up with some, you know, friends, and I go down to a beach, a lake beach. And we're just kids, 17, you know, putzing around. We see that there's this lifeboat, a lifeguard boat that is in this box. And we say, hey, wouldn't it be fun to just pull that out of the box and put it in the water and go row around in the lake? Yeah, that'd be fun. So I reach in, I grab the boat, I start to pull it out, and the same alarm that was in my dream the night before goes off. Okay, so this has my attention because I realize that I had a prophetic dream. Now, granted, I didn't dream about, you know,
anything momentous.
Yes,
but you,
nothing
you,
momentous.
You knew something was going to happen that happened.
It was momentous to my life. I mean, it's that event scared me, and I could have, who knows, I could have been arrested or whatever. It could have been trouble. But I pushed the boat back in and ran away. Okay, so I, in noticing this, I think, well, you know, I'm just a regular kid. I grew up in the Midwest. I'm just, you know, like everybody else, and I had a prophetic dream. That must mean that everybody has the capacity. And so I start paying attention to my dreams. I start paying attention to impressions that I get when I'm just, you know, hanging out, not thinking much. And I notice that I do receive information. Now, it's so important to me that I tell you and whoever is listening, I don't feel special. I don't feel like this is a special gift. It's a gift, yes. It's a gift that everybody has. Most people don't pay attention. Most people don't quiet themselves. Most people don't even try to remember their dreams. Most people don't even try to pay attention to those thoughts that come in on that subtler level that actually give them information about the person that they just met or the people that they're about to just meet. But it's there. It's there for everybody to tap into.
So what do you think the technology has to do with that? Because for me, it's a little counterintuitive to think that technology would help us to tune into that. It seems like we almost need to get away from the technology in order to connect with our intuition.
Well, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. It's just that I believe that the technology is modeling out for us what our capacity is. So,
okay. So this is an important distinction. What you're saying, then, let me see if I get this straight, would be that the development of the technology is kind of the human impulse or desire to realize their full potential. With other senses.
Yes, that's well said. That's okay. Very well said. And I would only elaborate on that by going back to what you said moments ago, which is that you feel like you need to get away from technology in order to be able to refine your own intuitive abilities. And I would say, yes, that's true because technology operates on really a grosser level, even though, you know, you think, well, no, wait a minute, how gross can that be? A signal beams up to a satellite, beams back down to a cell phone, and I can click into it and actually see images and words and digest concepts that are presented there. How could that be grosser? Well, it's grosser only because it's basically arithmetic, and it is electronic. And electricity, I find to be less subtle, grosser, again, when our body contacts it, than this very refined, very, very subtle input that comes through the light field. And by the light field, what I mean is the electromagnetic field that surrounds our bodies, which is less dense electrically than the electricity that runs a computer or runs a satellite. Am I making sense to you?
Well, absolutely. Yes, exactly. We are electricity as well.
Yes. Well, we are. And I feel that we're more refined electricity, you know, far more refined. And I think that it can even be
Well, it sounds like you're actually encouraging people to have more awe and appreciation for themselves, and which is pretty counterculture, really, because right now people tend to glorify the technology over the human being.
That seems to be what is running rampant, yes. And I only know from my own experience, again, going back to something that you said earlier, it was the original question that you asked me. Not too long ago, I'm living in Palm Springs. I went up to a house that I have in the Northwest, and it's on an island. I arrived at the house and discovered that the internet was down. It had been shut off, actually, and that my phone was dead, and I didn't have a phone charger. So, consequently, I was marooned.
Panicked? No.
I was marooned. I had that instantaneous sense of, like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And then I thought, well, there's nothing to do. I mean, I can't charge my phone, and I can't get online, so, all right, you know, I used to live like this, so I must have some skills about this. And I went, well, that's right. You cook dinner, and you have a bottle of wine, and maybe not the whole bottle, and then read a book. And so I grabbed a book that I'd been wanting to read, and I settled into it, and it was delicious. Then I woke up the next day, and it was the weekend, so I still couldn't resolve the problem. That day was such a revelation to me, because all of a sudden, hours that used to feel like minutes loomed large and long, and it was luxurious. And I found that my thought process slowed down, and it is the slowing down of the intellect or the linear thought process that allows the intuitive process to actually have breath, to step forward, to have a life. And that's where what you said, I think, is so important, that if people want to develop their intuition, develop their access to their soul's messages, whether it's in regard to relationships or whether it's in regard to career or to technology, to, you know, having that one brilliant thought that's going to make them a millionaire or a billionaire, they have to quiet themselves. And quieting themselves, it's not going to happen if you're clicking on to every single email and every single text that comes in.
So is there any particular practice, and I'm sorry, but we're almost out of time here, believe it or not.
Oh, my God,
any particular practice that you would recommend to people as far as how to quiet the mind and connect with their own inner knowing?
I am a devout proponent of meditation, and meditation is something that the very first time that I ever meditated happened spontaneously. Again, it was after that health crisis when I was 17, and I was sitting on a rock by the Puget Sound, and spontaneously, just from watching the glittering of the sun on the water, I dropped into this meditative state, and it, that simple experience was a revelation that changed my life, because I realized that quiet, that peace, I need that. And so it was some years later, but I then went to, I studied transcendental meditation. Study is a relative term. It was just, you know, a few sessions, and then they said, here's your mantra, and now do it every day. And I did. And you don't have to do that. You can simply, after hearing this, a person could sit down, they can simply get comfortable and listen to their breath and watch their breath, and on the inhale say to themselves internally, so, and on the exhale say, hum. And then a thought will come in, and it'll chatter, 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 and you go, oh, no, that's right, I'm saying so, hum. And you do that for 20 minutes, and do it for 2 weeks, twice a day, and your life will be changed because you will have laid in a new habit. And it's something that I mean, anybody can do it. It's free. It's easy. It just takes the doing. And what happens is physiological changes, brainwave changes happen. It drops you into a state where you can actually be receptive to those more refined messages that come from, well, that come from the
seeming... Yeah, where do they come from?
They come from the seeming nothingness, but as, you know, as I like to use the term pure potential. The void of space, the space in between molecules and in between atoms is pure potential, and that surrounds us every minute. And we can choose the realities that we want to manifest around us by actually aligning our vibratory frequency, by stilling ourselves and choosing our thoughts, so that what we develop around us is a frequency that brings in peace and joy and fulfilling relationships and abundance and the instinct to give from the overflow, which is really the most rewarding thing that an individual can do.
I couldn't agree more. We are out of time. L.D. Thompson, his book is The Message, A Guide to Being Human. I want to thank you for joining me in the Shame-Free Zone. And I'm going to say that the thing I'm walking away with here is the whole idea that our cell phones and computers are an attempt for us to connect to some of our own capacities that are already in us. I thought that was a very interesting take on things. I'm going to be pondering that for quite some time.
It's so wonderful to talk to you. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
I appreciate your being here.
Peace and blessings.
You too. Thank
Bye
you.
Now.
Good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian. Kenapa?